My name is Mike Dice of the Extra Rounds podcast. Typically, we stream our episodes live on the Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. But we had a lot of fighters to interview for the doubleheader in Bellator, and we wanted to go ahead and upload them as a special event-only preview to the podcast. So thank you for checking this out. Today, we will talk to the fighters of Bellator 166, though I want to issue a little disclaimer that these interviews were recorded before Thanksgiving. So if you hear them talking in a certain tense that doesn't make sense, that's why. Also, this was before the Emmanuel Sanchez-AJ McKee fight was pulled off the card. So we've included the interview so you can hear what they had to say. But let's start with the main event, Eduardo Dantas defending his bantamweight championship against the baddest man, Joe Warren. Let's talk to Joe first.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for taking the time out to talk to us during a holiday.
Yeah, no problem.
Is it frustrating having to be in training camp during Thanksgiving?
Not really. You know, I mean, I'm staying home with the family anyway, so still probably go over to my mom's house and hang out, eat some turkey, but I'm not going to be eating pies and all the other stuff right now. But no, you know, I'm usually always in a camp, and so it seems pretty normal.
In this matchup, you won the first matchup. Do you feel like there is a blueprint to beating him from that time?
No, I think we're different fighters now. I believe every fight's different. Anytime you get in that cage, most unpredictable place in the world, you can't really think anything's going to happen the same way as it did. I believe he's matured. I've matured. I believe he's turned kind of into a point fighter, winning with his jab and his kick. And you're not going to be able to point fight me. I'm not going down with a jab or a kick. So, yeah, I believe, you know, like I've said over and over, that MMA is a matchup sport, and I'm a bad matchup for him. And I'm excited to get in there and beat his ass in that Bellator cage, get my belt back.
Do you feel a bit of deja vu, or are you superstitious at all? You know, you defeated him in Thackerville for the title the first time or the last time, and now you guys are meeting in the same place?
Yeah, I don't believe in luck or superstition, you know, just preparation. I'm excited that it's back at Thackerville. That I believe that's like my home fighting territory. I fought there so many times, 5 or 6 times. Won world titles there, lost world titles there, had crazy fights, you know. Yeah, I'm real comfortable with where the fight is and who the fighter is. So I'm pretty excited that I get an opportunity to win another belt in Thackerville.
You mentioned point fighting. Obviously, Floyd Mayweather kind of made that really successful in boxing. But you've kind of seen a little bit of a trend with MMA fighters kind of point fighting to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's good or bad for the sport of MMA?
Well, I mean, that's the evolution of MMA. You know, you're going to see that. You're going to see the only person that can point fight someone is an extremely technical fighter, okay? And that's exactly who Dantas is, a young, explosive, scary, technical fighter, man. And if you can point fight a guy, look what he did to Galvo the last time, made him look like Swiss cheese, his face. Just point fight him, beat him with a jab, beat him with a kick, just moved, you know. That's a different fight than me. You know, you can't beat me with, you know, staying away from me. I'm not going to let that happen. I'll eat a bunch of punches to get to you, to take you down. So it's a different person. But, yeah, I believe MMA, you're going to see a lot of different things. You're going to see those real high-level jiu-jitsu guys just, you know, use their hands strictly to get to pulling guard positions, finishing people. And then you're going to see high-level technical fighters like Dantas win the point game. So it's you know, the sport's evolving, and fighters are getting more dangerous and more technical. So it's going to be exciting to watch the sport in the next few years.
Now, you obviously have a wrestling background, and you've been really successful with it. What allows you, with your wrestling, to, like, overpower people who are strong in jiu-jitsu? What makes the wrestling better?
It's just position. You know, their jiu-jitsu is better than mine. I'm more of an anti-jiu-jitsu guy. You know, I still have been caught. We've all seen it. You know, I'm a public fighter. You know, my best and my worst moments are always in that Bellator cage live. So that's good and bad. But I just focus on position and pressure, you know, and try to, when I'm on top of a person, you know, try to dominate them with some kind of power and hurt them a little bit, so that their jiu-jitsu is a little, is not as technical as it normally would, as it would have to, he'd have to throw things up instead of technically set things up. And I think that that comes with my pressure and my power.
I was wondering if you have any thoughts on your future after this fight. You know, do you see yourself fighting for a few more years, defending the title several times, or are you kind of thinking the Dan Henderson route? I'm just going to, you know, win and walk away.
Yeah, well, you know, Dan's like 6 years older than me. So, possibly, you know, maybe in 6 years we'll do that. Right now I'm focused on getting this belt back and continuing to be successful. I've always wanted to have some kind of career behind the camera or on the microphone for MMA. And that's still something I'd like to do. I mean, I'd be honored to be able to work with Bellator and Viacom after I'm done. But, you know, first things first, I'm in a situation to be, you know, the best in the world again in bantamweight. So I'm focused on that. And then we'll go one fight at a time here and see what happens.
You talk about wanting to work on the analyst. They had Chael Sonnen working commentary during the fights the last time. Have you kind of reached out to him and like, hey, I'd like to get in on some of that?
Yeah, Chael is a good friend of mine. We've wrestled together for, I can't even tell you how long, since high school. So, yeah, I mean, he's the best in the business at it. There's no one better than Chael. Okay, I mean, he is the best at, you know, color commentating, stirring the pot, you know, just analyzing fights. I believe that the two of us could be a killer combo. But, you know, I'm still fighting for belts, not just fighting for money and for viewers right now. So I think once I'm past that belt opportunities, which I don't know when that will be, hopefully I get an opportunity to step in and, you know, speak about Bellator like I should.
You know, he has his submission underground, too. Have you thought about the two of you potentially being able to commentate for that?
Oh, man. I mean, I've been on his show a few times. I do a lineup MMA podcast with Ben Askren and Sean Wheelock. So, yeah, I mean, these are things that I've been working on. And, you know, I can always learn from Chael because he's the best in the business at that. But, yeah, I mean, anytime I could be able to work with a friend like that, I'd be honored.
You know, all the craze seems to be two belts simultaneously right now. You've won at bantamweight and featherweight in Bellator. Is that a goal that maybe you didn't think about before that now you maybe think is realistic for you to achieve? And do you...
No, I mean, I'm a 135er. I'm a bantamweight guy. I was fighting 145 because Bellator didn't have 135 at the time. If Scott Coker and Bellator and Viacom, they want me to bump up and fight 145 for another belt, I'd be honored to. You know, I mean, we don't get paid the money that these 170s and heavyweight fighters do, even though we put on better fights. You know, still the bantamweight and featherweight divisions aren't getting taken care of like they should. And, you know, for me to get an opportunity to fight for another belt, you know, I'd be honored. But first things first, I got to get this first one. So we're focused on next week's Friday.
And I was wondering if maybe you had some insight. You know, you talk about your analyzing to the co-main event. You fought both guys in that fight. How do you feel that one plays out?
Co-main event, what, Galvo and Elsie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Galvo crushes Elsie, but, you know, you never know. You can't, you know, that's why it's really hard to predict fights because it's an actual fight. It's not a hoax, and you never know what's going to happen in that cage. I say it to you before, it's most unpredictable place in the world. You know, I never thought that I was going to get verbally submitted by and to get my belt taken from me from Marcus. And that did happen. So it kind of sucks, you know. So I think that Marcus will win. But that being said, you never know. You know, I mean, I'm excited to see the fight.
That unpredictability, though, is what makes the sport incredible.
Yep.
Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us during a holiday week.
No problem. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Best of luck to you.
So there you have it, the call with Joe Warren. Let's talk to his opponent, Eduardo Dantas. He doesn't speak English really well, so he's using the help of a translator. His name is Escobar.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to us.
No problem.
He's fighting Warren, who he's fought before. They say rematches favor the opponent who lost. Does he agree with this sentiment?
Yeah, he's the only loss he has in Bellator, and he's looking forward for this fight for a long time.
What did he learn the first time around that is going to help him get the win this time?
I say that a lot of factors have changed since last fight, but specifically, he after his first loss, his loss to the first fight, he learned to like more and more wrestling. So now he's not only practicing wrestling, but he's studying wrestling, and he's understanding better. So I think he believes that is the biggest change in his game.
He mentioned wanting this rematch when he won the title and it was coming time to make his first title defense. Did he want Warren to be that fight?
Previously, he was expecting to be someone else, but once they announced Warren, he was actually more happy.
Who did he think that they were going to schedule him originally?
Joy Tamanglo. He was thinking it was Joy Tamanglo.
He's fought opponents multiple times before. Is there something that's harder about fighting somebody twice?
He sees natural. It's just a rematch, and you can bring more weapons to the fight. Once you fought a person before, you start knowing a little better about that person. So this is natural. It's part of the sport. He doesn't see any problem.
He mentioned that he worked on his wrestling. Is it frustrating for him to fight a guy who primarily likes to wrestle?
Yeah, he said he was not frustrated, but just disappointed because he wasn't able to impose any of his game. So that was what bothered him the most. So he wanted to apply something, and he wasn't able to do it. He said this time going to be different.
Now, he's won the belt before. How much harder is it to defend the belt than it is to win the belt?
He says his pressure is not, and he doesn't have any pressure when he's fighting for the belt or defending the belt. For him, this doesn't change a thing. His motivation this time especially comes because he's fighting a guy that he had a loss before. So it's an opportunity to overcome and erase that loss from his cartel. And that's his motivation about the belt itself. He says, doesn't matter if I have the belt or if I'm going to fight for the belt, because in the end of the day, I have to win the fight anyways. Otherwise, the belt will not come back home with him. So for him, it's the same.
His former teammate, Marcos, is also fighting on the card. Have they talked at all or are looking forward to fighting at the same event?
He says, for sure, he's very happy having Marcos Galvão on the same card because he knows about Galvão's history and he knows all his journey in the sport. So it doesn't make him any happy fighting against him. He never liked to fight Marcos Galvão. He just did because he's part of the sport, he's a professional. But he enjoys to see Galvão fighting and doing his thing. So he's very happy to have him the same card.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you.
I appreciate it.
There you have it. Hearing from the champion himself, Eduardo Dantas, and his translator, Escobar. Let's keep it rolling and go to the co-main event, which is also a bantamweight showdown between LC Davis and Marcos Galvão. First, let's talk to LC Davis.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us.
No problem. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Good, man.
The most notable thing is that you've been away for a long time. What have you been doing since your last fight?
I was recovering from ACL reconstruction and getting prepared to come back and dominate.
You know, anytime somebody in combat sports is away for a long time, everybody always asks about ring rust. Are you a believer? Do you think that's all hype? Is there a secret to get around it?
I think ring rust is a mental thing, you know what I mean? if you allow ring rust to mess with your head, then it will mess with your head. If you believe that you're not going to have no ring rust, then you won't have no ring rust. The mind is so strong, man. So it really just comes down to what you believe, you know. And I don't believe I'm going to have no ring rust. I believe I'm going to come back and put on an exciting, dominating performance, and that's what I'm expecting to do.
You know, you talk about the mental side of things. It's easy to work on the physical things. You practice, you train, you work out, you lift weights. You know, what do you do to work out the mental aspect of the game?
Yeah, man, that's very true. It's hard, and a lot of people neglect the mental side of things. But I do a lot of different things. I do visualization. I do a lot of like writing and reading, and you know, just thinking about how I'm going to perform. I also do a lot of like I guess it's like positive affirmations. Like I'll just tell myself. I'll try to tell myself like 100 times a day, I'm in great shape. I'm in great shape. Or I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to win this fight. You'll catch me just walking around saying, I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to win this fight. No one can stop me. No one can stop me. No one can stop me. And before you know it, you say things a million times, you start believing it. I had a sports psychology class in college that my teacher told us that, you know, like smokers, if you say I am smoke-free for like 100 times a day for 30 days, by that 30th day, you will be smoke-free. You won't even want to touch a cigarette. So that's just how strong the mind is. And so I just try to, you know, do things to build up my mind as well as my body.
So that sports psychology degree really kind of gives you an advantage over opponents in fighting that a lot of fighters don't have as a resource.
Yeah, I don't have a sports psychology degree. I just took a class. You know, I have an exercise science degree, actually. And I have a psychology minor, and so I had to take a lot of psychology classes, and it definitely, you know, definitely gave me a little edge on my competition, I believe.
Is that something you're in the gym training young fighters that you're constantly trying to instill in them, that side of things?
Absolutely, man, because, you know, nowadays, you know, with the evolution of sports, man, everyone trains hard, everyone eats well, everyone's getting the Dolce diet and the nutritionist, and everyone has a strength conditioning coach and a boxing coach. So everyone's doing the right things, but the thing that people are missing is the mind, you know, and you know, the thing that's going to separate those guys, you know, one guy is, you know, doing everything right and the other guy's doing everything right, but who's training the mind? Who has the strongest mind? And that's really what it comes down to. You know, high level athletes, I'm fighting a former world champion on, you know, in one of the best organizations in the world. So, you know, what the thing that separates me from him is going to be my mind and my heart.
It's interesting that you mention everybody has the coach and the diet experts, and, you know, everybody's kind of caught up in that regard. I guess it seems like it would only be a matter of time before everybody caught up with the psychology and the mental aspect of things. Is there something you see as being like the next frontier for athletic development?
Yes, I do. I think, like you said, like the sports evolve, everyone evolves, and I think that's the last piece of the puzzle. That's the thing that, you know, a lot of people are neglecting, and eventually they'll start catching on to that as well. So that's just the evolution of the sport, man. It's crazy to see what athletes do now compared to 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Like, everyone in every sport is always evolving. Like, that, like old guys that say, oh, my sport was better back in the day, well, they're full of crap, man. The guys now are better athletes. The football players are better. The basketball players are better. The MMA fighters are better. And that's just how things go when you evolve.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you have a wrestling background, correct?
Yeah, I wrestled in high school and college.
Yeah, so Bellator's been signing a lot of amateur wrestlers. And, you know, for a long time, maybe amateur wrestlers did the sport because they loved it, but there wasn't a clear vision to a future like a football player or a basketball player as far as like professional sports goes. How big of an impact is that having on amateur wrestling that MMA is embracing them?
Oh, man. It's huge because, like, when I grew up, it wasn't cool to wrestle. You know, like, the cool thing to do is play basketball. You know, wrestling, you had to wear this tight uniform that no one really wanted to do. But MMA has helped it out help wrestling out a lot, because you see wrestlers, we're able to see guys like Frankie Edgar, Randy Couture, Dan Henderson, these pioneers, your Daniel Cormier, these guys that were great wrestlers, they come right into the sport of MMA and dominate. So what that does is tell wrestlers, like, oh, man, I have something after wrestling. And what it does to these little kids, they see, wow, I love MMA, but I realize to be good in MMA, I need to be good at wrestling. So, and, you know, you get guys wanting to go to high school and wrestle now, wanting to start wrestling at an early age. And it's definitely helped the sport of wrestling, and I think it'll continue to help the sport of wrestling.
You're back. You're fighting a former champion. Do you feel like this fight puts you right back in, you know, within a few fights or in the title contention picture? Like, this is the right opponent to kind of jump right back in, right in the deep end?
Absolutely. I feel like I got the right opponent. I'm fighting the former world champ. This is his first fight since losing the belt. I'm fighting the same night as the title fight. So, but it's in my hands, you know. I have this great opportunity, but it's up to me to do something with it. You know, I could go out there and put up a lame performance. I can go out there and put a subpar decision win, or I can go out there and starch them and make a statement. So, you know, it's up to me, and I'm looking to make the most out of this opportunity, and I'm looking to go out there and, you know, not just knock on the door for a title shot. I want to kick the door down and let them know that it's my title shot.
You know, you were talking about earlier speaking things into existence, so to speak, with the psychology aspect of that. When you're going into a fight, are you thinking, are you doing that saying, I'm going to win the fight, or do you emphasize how you're going to win the fight?
I don't really like to do how I'm going to win the fight, because fights are so unpredictable. And then, like, if you get one track get on how you think the fight's going to go and it ends up, it starts going a different way, then it could really mess with your mind. So I just try to focus on winning, you know, the end goal. You know, I focus on the things I need to do to win and winning. You know, I don't want to say, hey, I'm going to do this exact thing and that's what's going to win me the fight. I just go in there saying, hey, this is the game plan I need to execute to win the fight. And if I execute this game plan, I will win the fight. And that's what I use to motivate me and keep my head strong.
You're fighting back to back. You're fighting champions. You know, is there something you walked away from that Joe Warren fight with, you know, a lesson learned or whatever you'd be that's going to help you in this next event?
Yeah, I just learned that in the Joe Warren fight, I wasn't there mentally. I suffered a little injury before the fight that I thought was just like a minor knee sprain, and come to find out it was a torn ACL after the fight. So I went into that fight, you know, with the injury that I was trying to block out mentally, but I wasn't able to train properly. I couldn't even wrestle. I couldn't focus on wrestling, and I was going against one of the best wrestlers there was because my knee was, like, not stable. So, you know, that hurt me mentally. So, you know, I wasn't headstrong. I wasn't going into the fight positive, knowing that I can do anything. I can beat anyone. You know, I went in there like, oh, I feel okay. I hope I can do it, you know. So, you know, in order to beat the best guys in the world, you have to be at your best, and you have to have your best mind on you have to have the best head on your shoulders. And I didn't have that, and this fight I do, and you're going to see a big difference in this fight.
You know, there's a trend where, you know, fighters are recognizing if their body's not 100% before fighting, unlike they have in the past. Instead of fighting through injuries to stay on a card, they're recognizing that they need to heal. And fans kind of sometimes react negatively to that. Do you think that's unfair?
Yeah. Yes and no. Because when you tell the fans you're fighting, you tell your friends and family, buy a ticket to the fight, it's kind of like, and you sign a contract with Bellator to fight, it's kind of like your responsibility to make it to the fight. So, you know, it's your responsibility to not get hurt, but we're also in the sport of MMA where we're tearing our bodies up in practice to prepare for a fight. And the only way to prepare for a fight is fighting every day. So you're bound to get bumps and bruises. You know, I've had a long career. I've had several fights where I've fought injured and fought with injuries. So I don't want to make an excuse my last fight, you know, saying, oh, I lost because I had an injury. I really think I lost because my head wasn't there. My head wasn't there because of the injury, but, you know, it has nothing to do with the injury. Your mind's the biggest thing. And, you know, when my mind is there, I feel like no one can stop me. And that's what it all comes down to. So, you know, the guys that aren't able to fight with the injury is probably because they're not mentally able to get over the injury. I've been a real headstrong guy. I fought Takaro with a broken jaw. You know, I fought guys with broken foot. And I've been able to stay real headstrong, and it all just comes down to my mind, you know.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you in your fight.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that was LC Davis talking about all sorts of great things. I really found his talk about psychology fascinating. It's become a trend that we hear a lot more. On The Ultimate Fighter, we heard fighters talking about visualization. Of course, Conor McGregor's made it a tenet of his career. So really fascinating to hear him talk about it and see him embracing it and knowing that this is a trend. More fighters are going to embrace this and use this kind of mental psychology to give themselves an edge. But let's keep it rolling and let's talk to his opponent, Marcos Galboa. Marcos is speaking with the help of a translator named Sergio. Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. You're both coming off of a loss. When two opponents are coming off of a loss, does it make it harder? Is there more drive on both sides?
Yeah, he said it's going to be cautious and more calculated, more precise. They know the importance of the...
You're a jiu-jitsu practitioner. This is a wrestler that you're facing. You know, both strong grappling disciplines and arguably foundations for MMA. But I was wondering, which do you think is better?
They each complement each other. But, you know, once it hits the ground, it's definitely the jiu-jitsu, a stronger martial art.
What is
it? They go hand in hand, is what he's saying.
What is it about jiu-jitsu that makes it better?
More finishes, more submissions, you know, like in jiu-jitsu, you don't, in wrestling, it's more grappling and holding more and dominating, getting dominant positions, where in jiu-jitsu, you're actually finishing the fight.
Would you call this a de facto number one contender bout?
Yeah, without a doubt, there's no one else above myself and Davis, so they had I forgot his name now, Caldwell, but he lost, so I think that between me and LC Davis now.
Does the bantamweight title fight being on the same card make it more exciting, or is it kind of a distraction?
Well, my priority right now is to focus on LC Davis. I don't want to worry about that until for Joe Warren, until I'm done with Davis. After I beat Davis, then I'll sit down and watch that fight. But right now, my priority is on LC Davis.
Is this a weird spot to be in? Your friend Dantas is fighting for the title, or if he wins, it's harder for him to get another shot.
No, it doesn't make a difference. You know, I'm a guy who I'll never give up, and even though I've lost him twice, I'm gonna keep chasing that title again, and I'm gonna get my belt back.
His opponent, LC Davis, has been away for a long time. Is he a believer in ring rust?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I'm going to say my first-hand experience, when I fought Dantas the second time around, I hadn't fought in a long time. I was on a good rhythm before, and then when I didn't fight for so long, I definitely felt the ring rust.
What is it about the layoff that makes it so hard?
Yeah, it's all about timing. Next year, I want to be able to fight, you know, three minimum, and hopefully four or five times. You know, you lose the timing. When you don't fight for a long time, your timing inside the cage, you definitely feel it.
Speaking of him wanting to fight more next year, Bellator's done a lot expanding into Europe. Is he hoping that they'll kind of come to Brazil at some point as well?
Yeah, without a doubt, that's definitely on top of my priorities. But in all honesty, now that I'm living in New York and since MMA got legalized in New York, I'd rather fight here first.
How much would it mean to him to be able to fight in New York?
Going to mean a lot to me, you know, to be able to fight, especially in a big venue like either Madison Square Garden or the Barclays Center, because I teach here, I train here, I made this my second home, and I'm going to have a lot of people, the crowd is going to be in my favor, so it's going to mean a lot to me to be able to fight at home.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Let's move right along to the third featured bout of the night between Ben Reeder and Chris Honeycutt. Let's talk to Ben first.
Hey, Ben, how are you?
Doing good. Doing good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to us.
No, thanks for having me.
You're still living in Peru, right?
I am, yeah.
How's life in Peru?
So I go pretty good. Pretty good. We're in Lima right now. When I first moved to Peru, I was in Arequipa, just kind of more in the mountains a little bit. Now we're in Lima, capital on the coast. But yeah, it's good over there. I'm in Albuquerque right now, preparing for the fight. So I come out before each fight. But yeah, pretty good.
When like Thanksgiving's coming up, is it hard to be away from your family? They're back in Peru, or do you enjoy being here for kind of the beginning of the holiday season? How's that factor in?
It's tough always. Honestly, it's always, I have two kids. It's always tough to be away from my wife and the kids. And it just kind of, you know, when I'm here, it's just, I really get to work. You know, I make sure I don't waste any minute of the training camp here. Tough during the holidays, but I'm happy I'll be back for Christmas and be back soon enough.
When you're training in Albuquerque away from your family, do you kind of feel like at least that silver lining is that you get to focus completely on that? You're not worried about your family and that kind of?
I guess, but I'd prefer to, I mean, we're looking at maybe just moving out over here too, because I like to, you know, I don't want to miss, it's just tough being away every time. So that's it's a couple months before each fight. So, we're looking at making a move over here.
Does it motivate you though? Like you feel like, you're investing more than maybe other fighters, by sacrificing time away from your family. Does that motivate you to really, make sure that you go out and get the win?
Yeah, it's definitely a motivation. And definitely throughout the whole training camp, I just think like I don't waste any bit of that training camp, because it's just, it's that time I could be with my family. So I just make sure to get, just train really hard, be the most prepared I could be. And yeah, it's definitely a motivating factor for sure.
Now you're 17-1, which is a great record. You know, you're 3-4 in Bellator. Do you feel like you've gotten the push you deserve, or is it, kind of time to propel you into the title picture and kind of, up the level of competition?
I think so. Yeah, I think, I've been around for a while, a lot of fights. I would love to get, I would love to get that title contention, fight big names. I think this fight coming up will help me get closer to that. But yeah, that's obviously, that's where I want to be.
Going into your last fight, you said you wanted to impose your will, and you did. Do you think you'll still be able to do that in this fight with Chris Honeycutt?
Yeah, well, Chris Honeycutt is obviously a really good wrestler. But I feel like, I have a lot of MMA experience, and I'm just going to I'm going to go in there and, there's a few things that we prepare strategically for each bout. I'm going to definitely, look to do what I always do as well, I think so.
You have a strong grappling game. Do you feel like his wrestling's an issue, or do you feel like you can match him in that area?
I have a lot of respect for him. He's a great athlete. He's a really incredible collegiate wrestler. But yeah, I feel like my My grappling has been like really well adapted to MMA, and I just, you know, I feel good about all the tools I have that I bring to this fight.
Honeycutt's, you know, he's fought at welterweight. I think he's coming back to middleweight for this fight. Is it difficult for that? Do you think that size will be an issue?
I know that, you know, it looks like he's an okay size middleweight. I was surprised that he was fighting at welterweight because he wrestled at 197. So I was kind of surprised to see him fight at welterweight. So it looks like he's an okay size middleweight, but I know that it would be impossible for me to make 170. So, you know, maybe I might have a little bit of size on him.
Is that an advantage? You know, everybody talks about weight cuts when people are going up, that you know, not being able or not having to cut as much weight like he might be in that situation might benefit him. Do you feel that that's an issue?
Big weight cuts?
Yeah, well, you know, somebody who maybe has to make a bigger weight cut fighting somebody who doesn't have to cut as much weight.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think it depends on the person, how, you know, it's a fine line, right? You want to have size for your weight class, but you don't want to overdo it and not be able to recover in time for the fight. So I've found that balance. You know, I like where I'm at 185. So I know that I'll be showing up to the fight feeling awesome.
Charisma plays such a part of everything, and a lot of people feel like the middleweight division, the champion at least, lacks that. Do you kind of agree with that sentiment? And do you feel like, you know, maybe it's time for somebody else to come in and kind of change up this division?
That he lacks charisma? I mean, he's a champ, you know. He earned that belt. So I think that's, you know, that's great for him. You know, I think he's obviously a very skilled fighter. There's a lot of guys in the weight class right now that I think, you know, were knocked on the door, and you know, I would love to get that title shot. You know, I'm obviously very focused on my fight right now with Chris Honeycutt. It's, you know, we just got to kind of see how it plays out. You know, there's a handful of talented athletes in that division, and, you know, we'll have to just kind of keep testing against those guys.
What do you think about guys like Rory McDonald and Chael Sonnen coming in who could walk in and, I don't want to say jump the line, but, you know, work their way quickly into the title picture? Do you think, you know, if somebody who could potentially be 18-1 with, you know, 4 wins in Bellator, do you think that's fair?
Well, you know, I think that, I guess specifically talking about, you know, that's kind of like, you know, that's where I'm at. So I think I've earned, you know, to fight with some big names, but those guys have also, I mean, the two examples that you just pulled up, you know, Chael Sonnen and Rory McDonald, those guys have earned their way. Just in the sport in general. So it's kind of, you know, whatever the organization, you know, whatever Bellator thinks is best with that, you know, those guys have been around for a while and they both have done a lot in this sport. So I wouldn't really say it would be like, you know, that it would be unfair for them to fight for either, you know, the top contender or title fight off the bat, because they've proven themselves, you know, just in the sport they've been in a long time.
And you've you mentioned potentially moving stateside, right?
Yeah.
If you did, would you look to maybe fight more frequently? Is that like a goal of yours, or are you kind of happy with the, you know, I think this will be your second fight this year. Are you kind of happy with that pace?
No, I 100% want to fight a lot more frequently. I would have fought more frequently, you know, from Peru as well. I'd like to fight a lot more frequently. I feel like that's kind of, well, especially, you know, if you don't come out with any injuries, you know, like after my last fight, I was totally fine. I haven't had any, you know, real injuries. You know, I've been good after the fight before that as well. So I'd like to fight when you're healthy. I'd like to get back in there, more frequently, because I just feel like it, you know, it keeps you sharp and, staying active is important.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you in your fight.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the interview. Appreciate it.
Now let's go straight into the interview with Chris Honeycutt.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Mike? How you been?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us during the holiday week.
Oh, no problem. It's no holiday for me. It's work week.
Is it difficult to be in the middle of training camp during Thanksgiving?
Not at middleweight. It would be a hell of a time at welterweight, but middleweight, I get to still eat some turkey.
Speaking of which, you bounced back and forth between
them pies. Yeah.
What kind of pie do you like?
One more time. Oh, what kind of pie? Oh, I'll eat them all, but we'll put them in the freezer for an extra week, and I'll indulge when I get back.
So you mentioned being at middleweight. You've fought at both divisions. Do you think middleweight's the future going forward, or are you kind of open between going back and forth?
I don't know necessarily not going back and forth. I don't. I'm open to going down for a particular fight, or I mean, I'll never object to, you know, getting into camp and going out there and earning a paycheck, but. It sounds like that middleweight's going to be more or less my home.
Is it just because the weight cut's easier, or?
Well, it's definitely a lot easier, but I with the new restrictions and the whole thing that they're doing with the weight, or that they have done with the weight cutting and all that, it adds another level of, I'm going to say nerves, but fears, I guess you could say. You know, for me to, you know, go through an 8 to 10 week training camp and be highly prepared for a fight and to make the weight and to have someone on a commission board, you know, cut my fight for whatever reason is, you know, that would scare the hell out of me come fight week and fight time, because not necessarily the fight getting cut, but if I don't fight, then I don't make any money. So. It's putting my livelihood at risk. So, I mean, it's one thing if it was, you know, not fighting, but, I lose my paycheck.
You know, as much as people talk about weight cutting and, you know, the changes, I don't think any have ever actually heard anybody express concern with the commission. Why do you think that is?
Well, they follow the... Well, I mean, the commission is ultimately the one that follows those. They're like the law enforcement of the new rules. So I have nothing against them. They're just enforcing what the regulations are. So it is what it is. But and I get that the commission's always out there to, you know, for the safety of the fighter. But they're more concerned with safety than it is, you know, livelihood and you know, for some people that don't do the weight cutting appropriately, then that's one thing. But, you know, who's to say one does one the right way or the wrong way, you know?
Right. Going into this matchup, some might say that, you know, you're the smaller guy going up to, you know, up against a bigger opponent. Do you see it that way at all? And does that bother you?
I don't know. I haven't stood next to him. I know he's taller than me. I think I have a bigger reach than him. I don't think he's going to be stronger than me. We both stepped on a scale right before the fight as we're entering the ring. He might be a couple pounds heavier, but I don't think it's going to be enough to really dictate, you know, him having a huge size difference. Maybe if I fought him on my last fight, I could probably say otherwise, but I've had some time now to prepare and have a training camp as a middleweight. So I'm, you know, much, much more bigger and developed as far as my size goes now than I was in my last fight. So my last fight was only 6 weeks after my last fight at welterweight. So I didn't really change my camp up too much because I didn't have enough time to really become a true middleweight fighter. But now, you know, I'm walking around at 205, 206 pounds, and By all means, I'm not, I don't have a lot of extra loose skin laying around. It's, I'm still pretty, you know, ripped up and, you know, I'm ready to make this weight cut and, you know, go out there and get the win and, you know, show everyone that middleweight's my home and that's where I belong.
Now, Ben's a guy who likes to kind of, you know, get people to the ground, impose his will. You know, you're a wrestler as well, but you have, you know, tremendous striking ability. Also, you present a really balanced attack. Do you kind of expect him to try and stick what he's used to and try and challenge you on the ground, or are you expecting him to kind of try and keep it on the feet?
No, I think he's going to try to get it to the ground. I watched not all, but a lot of his fights, and pretty much every fight that he's had prior to Bellator, that's what he was able to successfully do easily. I mean, I don't think he other than maybe one attempt here and there, he pretty much was able to force the will on all of his opponents. And, you know, I'm not shy to play in that game with him or not, but I feel like my, you know, as far as my bucket of tools is much wider. I can stand, I can wrestle, I can force my will on him as well. So I feel like he will continue to do what Ben does, and I will be the one that dictates if he's able to do that or not. I plan to put on the feet for a little bit. I feel like he's a little timid there, so I'd like to keep on the feet for a little bit just to see, you know, see what he does and how he reacts to that. Because if I see that he's, you know, hesitant to pull the trigger or this or that, I'll pick that apart. And if he, you know, if he really wants to force, you know, force his will upon me per se on the takedown game, then, you know, at the moment I'll make that decision if I'll allow that or not. But, by all means, I have no problem, you know, playing that game as well.
You know, when you're going up against somebody who likes to get it to the ground, given your wrestling pedigree, are you just kind of salivating at the thought of this? Is this like, do you think, man, this guy's going to play right into my skill set and this is going to be easy?
As a whole, I think the fight should be easy. Obviously, you know, anything can happen in a fight. You know, anything can happen to either of us before the fight as far as, you know, just how we feel or, you know, just little injuries from the camp or something lingering. I mean, I have no idea how his camp's going. But, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty excited about it. I'm trying to keep a even keel about it because I don't really know what his abilities are outside of what I've seen on all of his fights that I have watched. But so I'm not going to say that that's definitely what he's going to do or that's all he can do. But yeah, no, I'm pretty excited to get into scrap with him, because if he wants to do that and I play into it, it will be, it will certainly be an exerting fight. One of us will get tired, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be me. He doesn't have an Ed Ruth or a Daron Wynn in the training room on a day-to-day basis. That's fresh off the highest level of wrestling, and you know, relying on that you know, to win each round.
And last question, you know, you're four out of five wins Bellator, you know, excluding the one no contest. Is there a sense of urgency to kind of move things along and get into the contender mix, or are you kind of comfortable with the pace that your career is going right now?
Well, there's no contest, which is a huge setback, because if that fight would have went another minute and 50 seconds, we went to the third round, which then, if it would have been stopped then, it would have went to the scorecards, and I clearly won the first round, and I was winning the second before it stopped. Obviously, I'm a little biased on that, but if you look at, I watched the fight over and over again. I outstriked him, and he was backing up more than I was, and up until the headbutt took place. And then that rematch would never have happened. So therefore, I probably would have still been undefeated. And, you know, I feel like that set me back as far as, you know, becoming a contender at the welterweight, which then I took a couple, I took my next fight at welterweight then, and then moving up to middleweight, I think set me back a little bit more, maybe not too much, maybe a fight or two, but, you know, I don't really have a sense of urgency for the belt. The only thing I would like to do is fight. So if as long as I'm fighting, the belt will come. I mean, I will eventually be the champion. It's just, is it the next fight? Is it the fight after? Or is it the fight after that? But, you know, you can only beat so many people before they have to give you that chance.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the pies in a couple weeks.
Yeah, definitely.
The only two interviews from Bellator 166 that we have left are Manuel Sanchez and AJ McKee. As we mentioned earlier, these were recorded before Thanksgiving. Since then, Sanchez has been injured and forced off the card, and McKee has been rescheduled with a new opponent. So keep that in mind, but we wanted to share these interviews with you anyways. First, let's start with Emmanuel Sanchez, a Rufus Sport product and featherweight contender who is really looking forward to this fight against AJ McKee.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, Mike. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us.
Thank you guys for the interview.
You you told me that you wanted this fight. So could you just kind of elaborate on why you wanted this fight in particular?
Oh, man, I want every fight. You know, I love to fight. I fight because I love to fight. I'm blessed. I'm very fortunate and thankful to God every single day that I have the opportunity to do what I love to do, you know, every day. And that's to go out and train. And then to have the ability to go out and fight. Oh, man. So, man, yeah, I want every fight. You know, for me, it's, you know, everyone who's in the division, anyone in the featherweight division, I can submit. I can knock out. So I need to go out and prove that to prove I'm the best. So if I have to fight, you know, 50 guys before I get to the title, so be it, you know, to prove that. But, well, whatever I need to do, whatever I have to do, I'm going to go out and do it. And it doesn't matter who it is against, I'm just ready to go out and get my hand ready.
Now, McKee has a lot of hype behind him, and you have the potential to kind of take his hype and make it yours. You mentioned having to fight 50 guys to get to the title. How far down the line do you think that is?
I do not feel like it's far at all. You know, I feel like, yeah, he's got hype buzz just because he's got his last name, but other than that, he's shined because he's had the right opponents in front of him to shine. He's never faced a shark like myself. So this is deep water that he's going to be going in, and I'm going to take him to a place where he's never been. And I know I'm right there. You know, I fought the guy who actually fought for the title, and he didn't beat me. You know, I was robbed, but it is what it is. And I think I've already, my name has been in the hat for over a year now. You know, I fought the former champion last year, and I took him to war, too. So I'm just proving each and every single fight on why I'm one of the best featherweights out there right now.
Speaking of which, you train with some of the best in the business, Tyron Woodley, Anthony Pettis, Sergio Pettis. How does that atmosphere helping you? Does that make you the tougher, like the toughest opponent that McKee's ever faced?
Well, I mean, absolutely. You know, you look at my camp and you look at his camp. I mean, it's something completely different. You know, I'm not taking anyone down, no disrespect, nothing. But I feel like the level that I'm at, the level of training partners, everything, you know, it's ahead of his. So each and every way that you can stay ahead of the game, then you have that edge when it comes in, come fight time. Because, I mean, my coach, you know, is a four-time world champion, Duke Rufus. My Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu national champion, world champion in jiu-jitsu. Ben Askren, Tyron Woodley, you name it, as far as, you know, the level of wrestling that I have here in Milwaukee, and so on and so on and so forth in MMA, you know, with Anthony Pettis, with CM Punk, with Eric Koch, you know, Sergio, and on and on and on.
you know, you've been you're always so inspirational. You talked in the past about aspiring to be like the Oscar De La Hoya and kind of carry the legacy outside of the cage. And just following you on social media, you're always just so upbeat and inspirational. Where does that come from? Is that something you learned from your parents? Is that something that's just a part of you?
Well, I've grown to know that, yeah, I think it is, you know, part of me. And it is part of my parents as well. Something that, you know, my coach, Duke Rufus, inspires me to do too. Because there's just so much negativity in this world. Obviously, we all see what's going on with all the horrible things that are going on in this world, right? That's one. And number two, there's so much of it already outside of MMA. People are trying to bring it inside of MMA. And with, I think it gives people the wrong impression of how an MMA fighter, you know, portrays himself, or is portrayed, excuse me, because, you know, you have that, like, Conor McGregor, you have guys that, you know, I'm trying to think of another big name, Michael Bisping, or just stuff, you know, where people will be throwing, John Jones, that's another perfect example, not to put him down, but I get it, there's gotta, you know, you gotta hype the fight up, you gotta try to be the person that you are, but to throw chairs and waters and middle fingers at people and talk about their mothers and talk about, you know, just how much money you got and you're the best and everyone else sucks and, you know, calling people bums and stuff. I mean, I get it. You know, you're hyping yourself up. You're getting people riled up, whatever, with the smack talk or whatever kind of talk you have going on. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're all men or women, you know, in this fight game. That we got families to feed, we got ourselves to feed, and, you know, we have lives that we gotta live, you know, outside of the ring. So I feel like the more we can lift each other up, that's the more you can help, you know, each and every MMA fighter around us. Granted, we're all against each other, we're gonna fight each other. I'm not saying, hey, you know, we're gonna build a whole this stuff together, you know, because eventually one day we might fight each other. But still, there should be no ill will towards one another, you know, and putting people down in that sense.
You know, martial arts, so much of it was based on respect and discipline. Do you feel like it's kind of, for whatever reason, drifted away from that more towards, like, WWE and spectacle?
Yes, you know, but I get it, because there's also, within the wrestling, you know, I train with a lot of wrestlers, so a lot of wrestlers will have the mentality that, well, I'm number one, I deserve the title shot. But we've seen time and time again in MMA, it's not who's most deserving. It's who's going to sell tickets, who's going to put the butts in seats, the eyes on the TV. You know, that's what sells. I understand that. I'm not going to be the bad guy, though. I'm not going to change who I am. I think anyone, you know, who knows me or has spoken to me well enough, that if you start to see me change on camera, you're going to say, that's definitely not him. And so don't try to be somebody you're not, you know, that's the way I see it. So I know the way I portray myself and the way I can, you know, spread the positivity and the way I feel about my life and the life of MMA and of being a martial artist, I feel like that's going to sell enough as itself and have a great following already as it does. Because I already have had many people in the MMA community tell me they're huge fans of my fight. They, you know, follow me on the social media too. So it's been really great. It's been a great ride so far, and it's just the beginning. I'm just only moving on my way up, and, you know, I don't want to ever think or, you know, be like that, or I don't need to put someone down to try to hype up a fight, you know? I do my talking in the octagon.
Back to the fight, more specifically, McKee is kind of a notorious fast starter. Is that something that you've, I'm assuming it's something that you've thought about and you're planning to combat. Is that something you're concerned with?
Not at all, you know. So many people in MMA could say, you know, or have said that I'm a slow starter, but I wouldn't say a slow starter. I just think I probably pace myself too much, or I overthink the fight too much, as opposed to, yeah, we got to get going right away. You touch gloves, you don't touch gloves, you're out there, make it happen, let's go. As my coach Duke Rufus would say, we don't get paid for overtime, so we get in, we get out, let's go home, and let's go eat pizza, you know, on to the after party. On to celebrate. So, do I think of it more like that? Yes, I do. Because, granted, okay, he's explosive. He comes out guns blazing. But in the fights I have seen, he can fade within the first 2 minutes. So, I'm not going to say I'm playing my cards right and doing this and doing that. You know, a game plan is a game plan. Everyone's got one so they get punched in the mouth. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to do me. And they call me the Matador, so I know how to tame the bull.
I like that analogy at the end. That's a good punchline. You just got your brown belt in jiu-jitsu. Do you plan on using that more against McKee, somebody who's maybe known as a striker? Do you want to take this to the ground?
I fight everywhere. You know, as my coaches would say, too, when it comes to any department, my striking coach, they'll say, I'm not your striking coach. I'm your winning coach. You can take this guy down, submit him, let's go home. Faster, easy win. My jiu-jitsu coach, he says, you knock this guy out, we win. I'm not your jiu-jitsu coach. I'm your winning coach. So whatever we got to do to get the win, we'll do it. So go out and do it, you know. Our coaches are very linked well together. So I'm not going to say that, oh, hey, yeah, this is the plan. We got to do this or here's the plan this. I'm a mixed martial artist. Wherever the fight goes, I go. I get taken down, I fight from the bottom, and I get back up, or I look for the submission, and I'm exciting from the bottom. If I, you know, he tries to take me down, you know, it's going to make me laugh. I think that's going to be inevitable because he can say what he wants to say, think what he wants to think, or what he's going to do, but it's inevitable. A wrestler is always going to go back to what they do and want to do, know best, and let's go for the take.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. You have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
All right, and now let's talk to his opponent, AJ McKee.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to get this stupid seat to lay down right now.
I wish I could say that I was better suited to give advice on seatbelts, but I find myself struggling with them way too often. So before we get into your bout, I kind of want to just talk to you about your father, if that's all right. You there?
You were making money. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Must have just cut out. So when you were, what did your dad tell you when you first brought up to him that you wanted to get into MMA?
No. Just like that too. No.
Well then how did, go ahead.
He's just like, business. I'm like, what do you mean? It's a sport, you know? And he's like, no, it's more entertainment right now than it is a sport. But I'm like, dude, I've been wrestling since I was 3 years old, started doing jiu-jitsu when I was like 7. I'm like, are you serious? You don't want me to fight? Like, I grew up around some of the greatest fighters in the world, people that like other people idolize and look up to, and I look at them like they're a normal person. And I'm like, man, like, if I can't fight, like, it's neither you're going to let me fight in the gym and become a fighter, or I'm going to be in the street and I'm going to do it. Can I have some money, please? All right.
Okay.
So, oh, yeah. With that being said, he just kind of, well, if you're going to do it, he's like, I need you to commit to it 110%. All right, cool. So, with that being said, he made me commit, you know, and for 110%, you're going to have to sacrifice being a teenager, sacrifice being a normal 20-year-old, 21-year-old, and grind like never before. And that's how it all started.
Now, your dad definitely has a point where it's, you know, become more entertainment than sport. Is that something he still kind of grapples with, or is that something he's kind of understood? And where do you stand on that? Do you kind of see like, yeah, I have to be entertaining, I just can't let my talent speak for itself?
It's a mixture of both, you know. You got to talk just as much as you back it up, and that's where Conor McGregor comes into play. You know, whether you hate him or you love him, he's talking his smack and he's backing it up. But at the end of the day, regardless whether you're hating on him or you're loving him, you're still talking about him, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day. But for me, I don't want to be that guy that the people don't like, you know. I want to be the guy that everybody likes and all the kids like, and they kind of look up to and have a role model of someone to kind of be like.
I'm sure that makes life easier for your dad to see you not embrace the entertainment side of things.
Yeah, it's a business, man. It's kind of a supply and demand thing, you know. You give the people what they want. They give the promotion and then you give the people what they want. They give the promotion what they want, and the promotion will give you what you want. You know, so it's kind of just a supply and demand thing.
Is it difficult sometimes to separate him as a coach from him as a dad, or is it just been you guys have been doing it so long that it's seamless?
Not at all, man. Sometimes I forget he's my dad. Like we're just so close. Like he's more of a best friend than a coach and than a father, you know. I can literally go to my dad and talk to him about anything and everything whenever. So it's our relationship is a very unique relationship, you know. Everybody in the gym, all the other guys and all the guys that have children and sons, you know, they're like, man. And anybody that really comes across us in our relationship, they're like, man, I idolize like your relationship with their father. Like, I really hope me and my son are that way. And I like to hear that, you know, just because he didn't come from the greatest place. And, you know, he did everything in his power to make sure that I didn't grow up the same way he did. But me living in Long Beach, you know, it's always not the next day in Long Beach as well. So I was around that stuff as well, but it was a choice, you know. It was a self-choice I had to make, whether I wanted to run with some homies in the street or whether I wanted to perfect my craft in wrestling or go down that wrong path.
Now, you mentioned your background in amateur wrestling. Bellator has made like kind of a point to sign amateur wrestlers recently. Is it a good thing for wrestling as a sport that, you know, kids getting into it at a young age didn't necessarily have the future like a football player or basketball player or baseball player would, knowing that there's a, you know, potential professional career in that? Is that, you think, going to help amateur wrestling grow?
Hopefully, man. A couple of years ago, they were talking about taking wrestling out of the Olympics, and that's one of the oldest sports there is. And it's honestly one of the greatest foundations to MMA is wrestling, you know. My dad was a brute wrestler, and literally you can put any of the greatest jiu-jitsu artists you can name in front of him, and I guarantee you he will not get submitted by them just because of how strategic and on point his wrestling base is. So it's a very key factor in this sport for sure.
Now, turning to your professional career a little bit, you know, five finishes, all in Bellator. You know, you see, there's some other fans get frustrated that they feel like Bellator isn't as slow walking someone like Michael Venom Page to the title. Do you kind of feel that same way? Like, hey, you know, 5-0, I've been knocking people off. Let's get me into that title picture. Are you kind of just content to, you know, enjoy the ride?
I'm just enjoying the ride, man. I'm 21 years old. You know, I'm a youngin in the sport. But my record's doing its talking, and that's where I feel this fight is a great fight for me. Emmanuel Sanchez being where I've put him at number 5 in our weight class, with Georgie Kakarian being 4, and then you go to number 3 at Pat Curran, number 2 at Daniel Welchow, and then, of course, our current champion, Strauss. So him being number 5 and fighting our number 2, our number 3, it going to split decisions, I don't feel that anyone's done anything entertaining or outstanding to Emmanuel Sanchez, where I feel that's a great gateway for me to go out there and show that I'm not a basic fighter like other these fighters. I'm not going to let this fight go to a split decision, you know. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to finish him within the first 2 rounds. And make a statement that I'm not like these other fighters, and that I am not a prospect. I am the young goat. You know, I'm my eyes on the prize, and that's to be the greatest of all time, not just 145 pound champ, but after that to move up to 155 pounds and take that championship belt as well.
I like the young goat name. I think that's a really marketable.
Yeah, you know, John Jones, he's the youngest champ ever at 23. I'm 21. I'll be 22 in April. So after this fight, December 2nd, hopefully I can get on that Tito Ortiz, Stefan Bonner card, because that's my home turf stomping ground. Hopefully my father can come fight on that card as well. You know, we go down in history and be the first father-son or in to compete in any professional sport as father and son, and to be able to compete at the same time. You know, no one has done that in any professional sport. And then along with me, hopefully after that, getting a title shot and becoming the youngest champ ever at 21.
So you mentioned John Jones, and you kind of just alluded to it there. You want to become the youngest MMA champ in history in any promotion.
Any promotion worldwide. No one has beat John Jones at 23. It's not even about the promotion, you know. It's Bellator is the second biggest promotion in MMA right now. But I feel within the near future, Bellator will outgrow UFC and they will be a bigger and greater organization because I love the way they treat us, you know, the fighters. They're great. They're a great company. You know, they're all about their fighters and they're always making us happy. There are little things that I wish that could be done, you know, that would help out fighters, you know, a $30,000 fight knockout bonus or something, you know, that would change somebody's life. You know, that would definitely change the way a lot of people fight, being able to say, hey, okay, I'm making $20,000 if I go out there and win. But if I go out there and win and get a knockout, I get another 30. I'm going to go out there and leave it all in that cage, you know, and it's going to come down to it. It's going to be you or I, you know, and most of the time it's not going to be me. It's going to be you. And that's what I train for, you know, just to be able to go out there and fight at the best of my ability.
You also mentioned pursuing a second belt in a weight class. Was that something you had thought about before, or is that kind of now that Conor McGregor's done it? David Branch, of course, has done it in World Series of Fighting. That's become something that maybe was a new goal that you didn't have always, but now you have.
It's funny because I wanted it before, and I feel like Conor McGregor's kind of paved the path for me to go and do what I want to do, you know, but to do it even better, you know. He has flaws on his record. As far as I'm concerned, there are no flaws on my record. He wants to fight Mayweather. Well, guess what? In my eyes, I am the Mayweather of MMA. I am the youngest, though, and that's the problem. I don't have a record to back it. I don't have the people to back me on it. But in due time, you know, more wins, more knockouts, more finishes, they won't have any option or any reason to deny me, you know. They will have to acknowledge what I'm doing, and they will have to acknowledge my achievements.
You know, given your record and your age, you're definitely in a strong position to establish yourself as the Mayweather of MMA. You know, years down the line, we might look back at you that way. Have you been able to reach out to him or talk to him at all, kind of pick his brain about how, you know, to go about pursuing that?
McGregor? No, man. I'm Mayweather. Watching his career. Mayweather. No, you know, he's kind of at the end of his career. McGregor doesn't need Mayweather. Mayweather needs him. There's no one left for Mayweather to fight. His limelight is kind of dying out, you know, so that fight would bring his limelight right back up, you know. But who wouldn't want to fight Mayweather for $100 million? I'll fight McGregor and Mayweather at the same time for $100 million. That's life-changing money to some people, you know. And that, honestly, that's life-changing money to anyone. And with that being said, man, it's just as much entertainment as it is fighting. So you gotta weigh out your pros and cons and pick your fights and just try to get the shortest and greatest route to the top with the greatest fights and having the people behind you.
Well, you have a bright future ahead of you. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Best of luck to you in your fight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to this collection of interviews from Bellator 166. myself and Elias are going to continue to do things like this. We love interviewing fighters and we love bringing you their stories. We can't fit them all into the show that we do Wednesdays on the Facebook, Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page that we stream live. So we're going to continue to do things like this. So please stay tuned. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. And look out for our Bellator 167 collection of interviews coming soon.